Hey there, welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. I'm your host, Green Diva Meg, and I have some powerful and inspiring stuff for you today. So sit back and just relax and let it flow in, man. I want to give a shout out to Climate Mama, also known as Harriet Sugarman, and Osprey Oriel Lake, and all of the amazing women I met last week at an event at the UN. I'm just so inspired by these indigenous women, these sisters, daughters, mothers, and grandmothers who are on the front lines of our collective climate crisis. And they're doing some tireless hard work. So I thought I would read a quote from one of these women. Here's an excerpt of a presentation of the Indigenous Environmental Network and Indigenous peoples of Mother Earth and our grandmothers in future generations. It was delivered by Casey Camp Horanek, who was also at the UN event, Ponca, Oklahoma, USA, to Rights of Nature Ethics Tribunal in 2004. Here we go. And I would like to remind you of a very simple thing. If you drank water this morning, or liquids, if you ate of the hooded nations or the four-legged, if you breathe, if your body became warm from the fires of the earth, then you must recognize and understand that there is no separation between humans and earth. And all that are relatives of earth and the cosmos, because you live in relationship with her as a result of being one with her, and there is no separation. So I hope I did that justice, because that kind of felt appropriate. So thank you, Casey. So before I get into all that's in the show this week, I want to just let you know what's on thegreendivas.com, because I know you want to know. We have the feature story right now is Green Sex for Climate's Sake, by Alicia Graves, based on the feature from, I think, last week's show, all about population and the interconnectedness with climate change and the impact of population on our resources and what the projections are for population growth is incredible. So she's been working on this, and it's an interesting article along with the podcast. I have a new recipe. I was experimenting with farro this past weekend. Oh my gosh, I have never enjoyed it as much as I did from this recipe that I kind of, well, the New York Times had a recipe, and then of course I, you know, screwed around with it, and it's pretty yummy, just saying. Okay, so on the show this week, we have a new Greenpeace, Green Divas, and Green Dudes segment with Diana Best, who is talking about this week of break free actions and the overall campaign to keep it in the ground and some of the events and encouraging things that are happening out there. We have a Green Divas foodie file with Dore Mullen, who is the founder of the Suppers program, which is kind of interesting, and I've been part of that, so hope you enjoy that. We have a Green Diva's Green Thumb with Wisconsin vegetable gardeners. This week is about three tips for great tomatoes. Yay! And, of course, the feature is my report from the We Can, that's Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, the event at the UN last week. So meanwhile, I am hoping that we can connect on social media at Green Diva Meg, Instagram and Twitter, and Green Diva Meg on Facebook, and at The Green Divas on Instagram, Twitter, The Green Divas Radio Show on Facebook, and of course, please check out our YouTube channel. I'm uploading some fun, short, tutorial, silly 1 minute, but they're, you know, I'm amazed at how you can get so much stuff in the 1 minute. Anyway, sit back, relax, and enjoy the rest of the show.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When climate change causes floods or droughts, it's local communities that suffer the most. So to educate local governments about why and how they should take action on global warming, the Nature Conservancy is leading resilience workshops.
It's a community-driven process that creates collaborative opportunities to really come up with solutions to tackle climate change, as well as build resilience into what their future holds for them.
That's Adam Welchel, the Conservancy's science director in Connecticut. He says communities that address climate change can also improve their quality of life.
Resilience is not just about hazards anymore. It's really about what makes a community what it is, and oftentimes that's economic resilience, jobs, business continuity, and social. Why are people living there and the connections in the community fabric?
During the workshops, communities assess both their strengths and weaknesses, identifying vulnerable populations, infrastructure, and transportation routes. With these insights, towns can then take action to both prepare for extreme weather events and strengthen their communities. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Care about the environment and social justice? Stay tuned as Green Divas and Green Dudes from Greenpeace, you know, those folks on the front lines of environmental activism, report on the hottest eco issues and ways you can take action. Well, another wonderful Green Divas and Green Dudes Greenpeace segment this week. These folks are out there on the front lines, really. They're just making stuff happen. So we're going to talk today with Diana Best, who is a senior climate and energy team campaigner. And I know she was recently involved. I know she's involved with a lot. But she was recently involved in a protest that, was larger than I think people expected it to be in Denver, having to do with the Keep It in the Ground campaign. They were trying to stop a federal lease sale. I don't know that they did that, but I do know that what I read about it was that people are taking notice because the activity, thanks to Greenpeace and people like them. The activity is stepping up. And anyway, so hi, Diana.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Wow. So you've been really busy because there's a lot we have to do.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we have been busy not only in Colorado, but all over the country for this big week of break free actions that are happening.
Yeah. So that's happening. Right. I didn't even mention that break free and talk to us a bit about what that is, in case people don't know.
Sure. So Break Free is a global week, a little bit more than a week, of actions that have been happening all over the world. It's from May 3rd to the 15th on six continents. Thousands of people have been taking bold action to break free from fossil fuels. It was an attempt to really say that enough is enough, and people all over the world are going to stand up together and say, we want to see a world without fossil fuels, and we're willing to put our bodies on the line, engage in direct action and civil disobedience to stop the fossil fuel program.
Yeah.
And it's been happening all over the world, and there's really wonderful photos coming in. If you do want to take a look at that, that's at breakfree2016.org.
Breakfree2016.org. Yeah, I did. I was involved with one that was happening here in Albany, New York. I could not get there, but I know some friends that made the trek and got involved with something up there. So we'll find out more about that next week, I think. So what was going on in Denver? I mean, there's a lot going on in Denver. Obviously, that's the seat of a lot of fossil fuel industry activity. But what were you doing there recently?
Yeah, so there were 2 days, really 2 big days of direct action that happened. One on Thursday at the Federal Bureau of Land Management, federal oil and gas lease sale. And then one again on the Saturday in a small community that's facing fracking, just mere feet from an elementary school. Aww. Let me start with the activity that happened on Thursday. So, you know, there's a really powerful movement that's been happening for a long time, but has been really escalated in the U.S. in the last year or so around keeping fossil fuels in the ground. We know that, you know, around the world, we know if we're really going to avoid catastrophic climate change, we need to start saying we need to keep fossil fuel reserves in the ground. It's not enough to just cut it off at the power plants and reduce emissions where we're burning fossil fuels, but we also need to start keeping those reserves, those really heavy carbon reserves, underground, under the ground, under the ocean, wherever they lay. You know, the potential greenhouse gas emissions of all remaining federal fossil fuel reserves is about 450 billion tons. This was really highlighted by our friends at the Center for Biological Diversity. Last year released a report called Grounded, the President's Power to Fight Climate Change, Protect Public Lands, and Keep Publicly Owned Fossil Fuels in the Ground. Really some powerful facts coming out of there, including, you know, from 2003 to 2014, 25% of all U.S. federal fossil, or that about 25% of all U.S. emissions came from the federal fossil fuel program. So we're talking about a significant amount of greenhouse gas emissions tied up in the federal fossil fuel program.
Yeah, and so much of that is these land leases and these offshore drilling sites, and then there are beautiful natural landscapes and resources, and they're also in people's backyards.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, not only is there this growing movement to say, you know, these are our beautiful public places. They belong to all of us. They belong to all taxpayers. We want them protected from extractive industry. But now there's also this really important climate imperative, too, that if we start to say no to federal leasing and see the end of the federal leasing program, there's a significant carbon number attached to that. And that helps us get to that number of trying to keep fossil fuel emissions down.
Now, what about all the naysayers who are like, but we can't do it on renewable energy. We can't power this country on renewable energy that quickly. What's the answer to those people?
Yeah, you know, I think this is, we're in a really interesting place right now. Transition is never easy. I don't think anyone believes that we can get to 100% clean energy overnight. But this is a massive ship, and we have to start turning the wheel of that ship. And that means actually starting to say, instead of continuing to move forward with the reckless federal leasing program and leasing more and more and more acres to fossil fuel companies, we need to start saying no. We need to start turning the ship towards powering clean energy. And we need, you know, to recognize that if we do want to live on a livable planet that's healthy for all people and all beings, then we're going to have to see an end to the leasing, the federal fossil fuel program eventually.
Yeah. I mean, and even if they do stop creating new leases, they still have enough probably, I mean, I really don't know, but to begin the transition, there's still enough happening, right? I mean,
yeah.
Come on, people. Enough's enough, man.
Right. There's still a huge amount of reserves that fossil fuel companies do have. And, you know, I do think there's this really interesting piece with the federal program as well, which is what this Keep It in the Ground movement is all about, which is, you know, there, I already mentioned the 25% number. So 25% of our emissions do come from the federal leasing program. We also have a president who has publicly said, if we're going to avoid climate change, we're going to need to keep fossil fuels in the ground.
Yep.
You have, you know, Hillary Clinton, who's, of course, running for president, saying that we're going to see the end of the federal leasing program. If we're serious on the global scale.
Wait a minute. She said that?
Yeah, she said that. She was interviewed at one of her rallies a couple months ago, and she has said, we're going to see, it's only a matter of time before we see the end of the federal leasing program.
Well, okay.
And, you know, I mean, I think this is a really tough situation, right?
Yeah,
where we've said globally, we're committed to fighting to stop climate change, and we're going to take responsibility for that. You have the Obama administration saying that in Paris and then ratifying that again in New York. And then you have that same administration federal program continuing to move forward with reckless leasing on public lands. Those things don't add up. And that's what the Keep It in the Ground movement is all about. It's saying, listen, let's start to put our money where our mouth is. Yep. And say, if we're serious about stopping climate change, we're serious about cutting emissions, that doesn't just mean the Clean Power Plan, as powerful as that is. It also means taking responsibility for where we can stop leasing. And that leasing can stop on our federal lands with an executive order from President Obama.
Yeah, and as I've talked with some of your colleagues in previous segments about taking the fossil fuel out of the equation when it comes to politics and elections and these candidates, or I think that's imperative, because I don't know why Obama may or may not be hamstrung, but it certainly doesn't help. And I like that you're still calling for these candidates to please not take that money.
Yes, absolutely.
So this brings me
to what Thursday was really all about. So we're in the middle of this, really powerful week of direct action happening all over the world. And lo and behold, a federal lease sale is happening during that precise window of time. 6,900 acres, a little more than that, of public lands in Colorado were going to be auctioned up. And what we saw was this incredible moment of not just Coloradans, but people from all over the Mountain West coming together in Colorado to say, you know what? We've been at auctions in all of our communities. We have protested outside. We've even gone inside to the lease sales, and we've chanted and we've sung together and we've made noise. We've been escorted out. I think it's time that we actually shut one of these lease sales down. So we had 300 people come to the Holiday Inn. The Bureau of Land Management actually moved the auction to the Holiday Inn. 300 people coming together and attempted to stop the lease sale. Even 8 brave activists broke away from the crowd.
Wow.
And actually blockaded the doors to the lease room,
Wow.
The auction room. They were able to hold it for about an hour, but the Bureau of Land Management snuck in the potential bidders, into the room, and the lease sale moved forward with only members of the industry and a select few members of press. No public were actually allowed into the public leasing process. Where they auctioned off those 6,900 acres.
Well, I like that we're not going to make it easy. If you're going to do it, we're going to make it challenging for you. And hopefully in time, they will get the message and Obama will get the message. And the next president will, be able to take significant action.
Absolutely. Yep.
Woohoo. So tell our folks what they can do to to break free, to participate, even though the week will be over. I'm sure we're all encouraged to continue some of these actions and activities. What can people do?
Absolutely. Well, this is, I think, really the kickoff of a new wave of civil disobedience that we're going to see all over the country and all over the world. I think people really get it that we're going to have to start putting not only our voices, but also our bodies on the line if we're going to see a world free of fossil fuels. I think the biggest thing right now is we have an incredible opportunity while President Obama is still in office to see an end to the federal leasing program and to continue to demand that he take executive action to end that program, or at least pause it and say, we really need to account for how our federal leasing fits into our broader climate plan.
Yep.
So I think the biggest thing people can do right now is continue to put the pressure on President Obama. We still have a fair amount of time before he steps down and the next president takes office. And I think that's a really imperative window. And people should continue to call for that. You can sign a petition on our website at greenpeace.org.
I just did that.
Great.
When you called, I was filling out my little letter to President Obama. I'm like, please,
perfect.
Please.
Perfect. We kicked off a sort of a new phase of this Keep It in the Ground campaign, which, as I mentioned, has been going on for a while. But we kicked off a new phase of it last September. Over 400 groups from all over the country signed a letter to President Obama asking him to call an end to the federal leasing program. We're almost at the one-year mark. September will be the one-year mark. We have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that have signed up. We're going to do a big petition delivery to President Obama at the end of the summer. So keep getting the signatures in. Keep raising your voice. Keep challenging that we don't actually need to continue to lease new federal fossil fuels or fossil fuels in general.
Yeah.
If we're going to do anything, we need to start by saying no to new leases.
Yeah, sister, I'm with you. And I hope everybody listening, you know, goes to Greenpeace. I think it's greenpeace.org/USA.
Yep, that's right.
And, you know, keep active. Let's keep their feet to the fire till things really change.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much for your help, Diane. And I'm looking forward, you know, for all the work you're doing. And I'm looking forward to talking to you again as maybe by the end of the summer, we'll have some, you know, significant news here.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
To get active and connect with other Green Divas and Green Dudes, visit greenpeace.org/USA. And of course, check out thegreendivas.com. for more ways to live a deeper shade of green. Vibrant health and beauty radiates from the inside out. Get your glow on with Green Divas health and beauty tips, from natural skincare to creating healthier habits that make us sparkle.
Well, this is a great subject for many Green Divas, not so much necessary for me anymore, which is, you know, interesting. Well, we won't even go there. But I'm glad to be speaking today with Priscilla Woolworth, who, among many things, is the author of a book called Lola, Lots of Love Always. She's a sustainable living expert. She's a really great photographer. And a good friend. Hi, Priscilla.
Hi, Meg. Thank you for that lovely intro.
Well, you know, I mean it all. And sometimes I just go on and on, and I'm like, shut up, Meg. But I do mean it. So,
thank you.
I'm excited about this conversation because we've never really talked about hormones, unless we've talked a little bit about menopause, because that's where my head's been in the last couple of years. But you know, I like the topic suggestion because there are so many Green Divas, including my daughters, that are still experiencing PMS and menstrual issues, and you had some good ideas for them.
Well, I think, you know, it's so helpful to know what are alternatives that you can do, conventional. I refer to conventional, old school,
right,
alternatives, but, you know, non-toxic alternatives,
right,
to soothe all the various kind of cramps and aches that happen when you have your period. And, you know, one of the ways to soothe certainly kind of an achy body is a hot water bottle, something as simple as that. Of just filling up a one of these kind of, you know, they're considered old-fashioned hot water bottles, and it really has an effect on your abdomen.
Oh.
it's as effective as using a painkiller for an hour. I mean, it's you know, heat is really soothing, and
I love those hot water bottles.
Yes, hot water bottle. Something as simple as that is effective.
Always had one in my little medicine, whatever, my remedy cabinet, you know. And I've used it for a variety of things, and I used to use it for that too.
Right. Oh, good. Good, good, good. You can also, another thing to do is make yourself a cup of chamomile or ginger tea. That also has a relaxing effect on the body, and also relieves sore muscles and just, you know, general aches and pains that you feel when you're either, you know, just pre-cycle.
Yeah.
You know, another sort of thing that happens is bloating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you feel, you just don't feel good, and you feel bloated, and just sort of making some changes in your diet can relieve that from just eating more leafy greens and getting all the calcium and magnesium from the spinach and yeah. Swiss chard and kale. They work together to balance each other out and are, you know, really effective at reducing the bloat.
You know, and I still get that, and I still actually cycle, even though I'm not actually, you know, bleeding anymore. And the things that held true back in the day still hold true for me, and I have to really watch my caffeine intake
mm-hmm. yes.
During the month. And I can always tell, and I didn't learn this until towards the end, that the misery the amount of misery I would have in any mm-hmm. given PMS period definitely could be attributed to the level of caffeine and sugar.
And sugar.
Yep.
Sugar has a huge
yep.
Effect as well. And,
yep.
and it's really a good idea to cut out sugar entirely
yeah.
During your menstrual cycle because it just, you know, it spikes and, you know, you feel much more emotional
yeah.
when you have these sugar kind of ups and downs.
Doesn't help.
Doesn't help. So, yeah, that sugar is, it's a tough one because we're all kind of, born with this sort of craving for sugar. And, but, you know, you can definitely cut back or cut it out entirely.
And you mentioned magnesium, which I came to find out my body was craving, you know, mm-hmm. and so I would reach for chocolate, and I finally learned to just have a small amount of really good quality dark chocolate or have something similar, because that is high in magnesium. That's why we often reach for chocolate during those times. But there are obviously many other ways to get magnesium in our system, right? Like
right.
you said,
well,
the greens.
Definitely the leafy greens is the most effective. And the magnesium also helps reduce water retention,
mm-hmm.
and which causes, you know, is the, you know, reason for the bloating. So just adding more kale, more spinach to your diet, it's, again, one of those win-wins. You feel good, your whole body feels good, and it's easy.
Well,
it's an easy thing to do.
One of the things that I learned, again, towards the end, because I was a slow learner, was to really let myself, how do I put it, go with the rhythm of my body.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not always easy to do if you work in a certain schedule or environment.
Right.
But, I was able to arrange my life so that I could sort of honor my body when mm-hmm. it needed to rest, or because I did have to, usually the day before my period, like within 48 hours, I could sleep almost around the clock.
Right. Wow.
And you know, we can't always do that, but in other words, trying to listen and honor mm-hmm. the rhythms of our body,
yes.
often made things a lot easier for me.
Very much so, and it's something that I wasn't conscious of when I was younger, of mm-hmm. being sort of connected and paying attention to,
right.
to, yes, as you just said, the natural rhythms, the signs that my body's giving me. I would just not pay attention. And in fact, when you do and put your body first and your, you know, those needs, it makes a huge difference.
I think it does.
And especially with nutrition,
yes.
You know, what we eat just has such an impact on how we feel. So certainly, you know, when it's that very tender time of the month, just making those, that you're aware that you have these options can really make a difference in how you feel.
All right. So are there any other remedies or ideas that we haven't mentioned that might be useful?
Well, the other one, of course, is doing exercise.
Yes.
Really doing sort of yoga, meditation, breathing exercises. Those help as well to reduce sort of anxiety and stress that can be connected to premenstrual, you know, symptoms.
Yep.
And so just doing certain exercises will reduce those symptoms.
Yeah, you know, the anxiety. I used to have, you know, like wild anxiety just prior to, and it was like not connected to anything necessarily. And again, it took me like 40 years to go, oh, okay, I can just let this flow through me and like do yoga, meditate, take a walk, whatever, to reduce the physical anxiety symptoms. But it took me so long to realize.
Right, that they were connected, you could actually just by doing some activities, doing yoga, that you, in fact, it would help release some of these natural pain-killing, euphoria-producing chemicals in your body, very simply.
Well, so we share it with our younger sisters, younger green divas.
The advice we wish we had when we were younger.
Yeah, well, that's what Lola's all about too, right? I mean,
yes, completely. Absolutely.
So people can visit your website, PriscillaWoolworth.com, to find out more about your store there, your almanac, your book, Lola, which is brilliant. And hopefully we'll have a post to share with folks around this that you've done. And great advice. Thank you so much, Priscilla.
Oh, my pleasure, Meg. Thank you.
Are you sparkling yet? Well, you will be. For information on this segment and lots of other healthy green living information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com. Wishing you had a green thumb? Or want to learn more about sustainable gardening outdoors and in? Expert green divas and dude gardeners share tips for everything from composting to growing herbs in your kitchen. Listen to the Green Divas Green Thumb for low-stress gardening tips.
This is Gardening in 2 Minutes. We're going to give you three tips on better success at growing tomatoes so your harvest will be much more rewarding.
You want to think about where you're growing and what type of tomato you're going to grow. If you're growing in a small space or a container, you want to grow a bush variety, also known as a determinant. If you have a larger space, you can grow an indeterminate, which is also known as a vine.
Growing tomatoes take a tremendous amount of nutrients in the soil, so adding compost at the time of planting, as well as using a good organic-based fertilizer in the hole at the time of planting, can greatly help these plants to get off on a good start. You might need to also top-dress some fertilizer during the growing season. Just simply put it around the top on the ground and water it in. You also want to add some Epsom salt to the hole at the time of planting. If you already planted your tomatoes, you can add a handful around the top. This is a magnesium sulfate. It allows the plant to pick up the necessary calcium in the soil that will prevent that black rot on the bottom of the tomatoes that you may acquire during the growing season. If you don't want to use Epsom salt or don't have it, you can use powdered milk in the bottom of the hole. About a half a cup will be more than adequate.
You want to mulch around the base of your plants. This prevents diseases from splashing up from when you water your plants or when it rains onto the foliage. It also helps retain moisture and it helps put a barrier against some weeds. You can use dried leaves or dried grass clippings are great options for mulch. You want to trim around the base of your plants, starting from the base 6 inches up the stalk. Trim all the foliage all the way around, and this will prevent a lot of diseases as well.
For more information on how to grow the best tomatoes you've ever grown, our weekly video productions, as well as our free downloadable digital quarterly magazine, you can find out all that information at
thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.
Underneath the tomato tab at the top of the page. For Gardening in 2 Minutes, I'm Joy Baird.
I'm Holly Baird.
Inspired to grow more organic stuff? We are. To learn more about this Green Divas Green Thumb episode and all kinds of other great green information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
The Green Divas love food. Organic, local, fresh, whole, delicious food. Here now is another Green Diva foodie file.
Oh man, I just love this woman, and her garden is in her home. She opened up her home years ago for a group of us. She She was then, you know, in the founding stages of what was and is now the Suppers programs. And basically there was a group of us that gathered at her home, and we would rummage through her garden and we would all cook together and then sit and have a meal. And there was some structure, but it was really about sharing ideas and concerns and ways to eat healthier, a more whole, whole foods kind of diet, which I had always done, but it was fun for my husband. And I always learned, no matter what, I always learned. And I just loved being in her garden, in her kitchen. And anyway, so Dore Mullen, she's the founder of Suppers Programs. Hi, Dore.
Hello. That sounds like a good introduction.
Well, you know, I was like babbling on and on. I'm like, yeah, I just remember how warm and welcoming you and your home, everything was really, yes, I aspire to be so warm and welcoming and nourishing for all of us in many ways. So, yeah, I'm getting hungry. I'm getting hungry because I'm remembering some of the food we cooked. I remember playing with your Cuisinart and all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah, it whets the appetite.
So tell us a bit about the audience doesn't know the way I have a history with Suppers, but tell us what Suppers is.
So it is a network of programs that are nearly free to users. We cook together and people just cover the cost of the meal, so it's obviously it's not very expensive. And we get together mostly in people's homes, sometimes in a small public venue like an organic food store or the library, someplace where there's a kitchen. And this is it. This is the whole thing. We cook together. We eat together.
Mm-hmm.
We have these educational experiences, and we do these experiments all around whole food. We don't use any ingredients that are processed. And we might journal the experience. And through this social experience, through this building of community, we are helping people turn around really serious diagnoses, like all the ones that you and your listeners already know about that are very much driven by the processed food supply.
Right, right. Whether it's diabetes, heart disease, cancers,
right.
And in, you know, in our case, there was a lot of us that were recovering alcoholics.
Yes, there are Suppers for Sobriety meetings, meetings for stable blood sugar, people with digestive diseases and disorders and, you know, celiac disease and so forth. Then there are meetings that are more prevention-oriented that are really about the cooking. Like you were probably focused largely on how can we take this food and make it delicious? How can we make the whole food so delicious that
right.
it rivals all the processed stuff
yep.
that the manufacturers are specifically crafting so that we'll get hooked on it. And they're very good at manufacturing foods that we get hooked on.
I know. My husband loved coming down there. He likes my cooking. I've always been sort of a whole foods cook. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just always so much to learn and share. And there's something so fabulous about being in a sort of community kitchen experience where
mm-hmm.
everybody's like sharing ideas and knowledge and I'll never forget making that fig and tomato salad. We went out to your garden. We picked figs. I have such fig envy. I have never seen such a gorgeous fig tree. And tomatoes all happened to be ripe. And we made a salad with whatever was there. But at the time, and I still make that salad when figs are around.
Right. Well, September, October in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So that's the idea. You know, we don't really need to improve on nature. Maybe we can't improve on nature. We just have to get our palates, you know, retrieve our palates from the food manufacturers that really have spent a fortune on
yeah.
figuring out how to make foods hyper-palatable, if you will.
That's really upsetting.
No.
You know, but one of the other things for me was, you know, I can get into a rut where I make like the same few meals every week. And I don't get creative. And so sometimes for me, it's also about, you know, finding other things in that palette and getting inspired by other people and new ideas. But I love the idea that it's a nice and sort of gentle environment for people who are exploring, especially when they're new to the sort of whole foods and nutritional solutions to some serious problems.
Yeah, and that creating that environment of safety, very much modeled after the 12 steps, you have to have that first. You have to have trust first before you can expect people to try new foods, particularly if they've never really liked vegetables or fruits or plain roasted meats rather than all of the processed stuff. You've got to make it a really safe social environment before you can do the rest of the work.
I really personally enjoyed the cooking and all that's fun and the socializing, but the meal itself and the discussions that occurred and the sensation. I'm sort of like an old hippie gal anyway. Like, we used to have potluck dinners, you know, up in the Berkshires and Sunday nights from our co-op, and everybody would, you know. And so it reminded me of that type of environment, which I always enjoyed. It's for me, food can be such a wonderfully social experience as well. So tell me how the program – now, see, I haven't been down to you for suppers, dinner in like 7 or 8 years or something.
Yeah, 7 or 8 years, yep.
It's insane. So tell me what's been happening. How's it growing? How many meetings?
Well, we probably had – when I know you, we probably had 5 or 6 facilitators total. Now we're probably closer to 50.
Wow.
We have 30 to 40 meetings a month. Most of them are in central New Jersey. Mm. So we've grown just in sheer numbers, but we've also grown in the diversity of the kinds of meetings that we offer, because we can basically, if a problem is driven by processed foods, and most of the current chronic illnesses are driven by processed foods.
Gosh. Well, they're certainly not helped by it, most of them, right?
No, right, and there, you know, I always argue for the addictions model. If you, even if it's like, say, rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or some of these autoimmune disorders, if the problem is driven by inflammation, and most of them are, and you eat comfort foods because there's so few sources of pleasure in your life, you're also setting yourself up, I mean, unwittingly, you know, no fault of your own, you're setting yourself up to comfort yourself with foods that create these endorphin responses and kick in the pleasure cascade, and people do end up functionally addicted to the foods that keep them inflamed. So without really much input from doctors at all, we're now helping people that have, as I mentioned, rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and other autoimmune conditions, because so much of their inflammation is avoidable if they could just get the support that they need to stay away from their inflammatory foods.
Now, and you do have some medical endorsements, I noticed.
We actually have quite a few. That's a big change also from 8 years ago. We have quite a few doctors and chiropractors and acupuncturists, psychologists, psychiatrists, talk therapists that are referring to the program now, because the more progressive there are, the conventional medical people are getting, some of them are getting very progressive about these things, but their disciplines are not set up to provide the kind of services that people need for behavior change.
Right.
So they send, like, almost like a prescription, they send people to the program and say, this person needs to be on a gluten-free diet, that person needs to be low glycemic, you know, this person has severe allergies, he has to be aware of everything that goes into his food, or he might, you know, start asthma attack or something like that.
Wow.
So, and that's possible, because we are working from single, whole, fresh ingredients.
Yep.
And if somebody comes to a meeting who's socially isolated because of the way they have to eat, it's like not a problem here. They just need to have control over their own salad dressing and their own pot of soup, and they can be served. So the social component and pulling people out of isolation is huge with this program.
It is. It's very exciting. So I don't know that we have any suppers up here, and I would love to be able to. We'll have to talk about that, because I'm just really, you know, I'm remembering now how much I enjoyed it and had wanted to do this, but I've obviously been sidetracked by my own other things. So if people were curious about how to learn more, what would they do? What's their first step?
So we have a beautiful website with 600 or 700 now searchable recipes. They're all whole food, no gluten, no sugar. That's the Suppers with an S, programs with an S, .org, thesuppersprograms.org. And there's just oodles and oodles of content and recipes and videos and so forth for people that would like to find these food and social solutions to their mental health and their health problems.
Now, have you started any Suppers programs in any area other than New Jersey?
Yeah, what happens is as facilitators move, like for business reasons or family reasons, they take the program with them. So we've got like one or two in North Carolina and one in Florida. Now there are three people that are working around the Philadelphia area.
Nice.
There are a bunch of people up in the Suffern and Rockland area that would like to get it going, Westchester. It's just a matter of finding the people who are willing to train to facilitate because, of course, you need somebody to host it. It's a home-based meeting. So that's the challenge. But, it must be working because we've got, like I said, 40 or 50 facilitators now.
Well, I highly recommend going to thesuppersprograms.org, right?
Bam.
And it is a beautiful site. And one of my recipes is in there, although I don't think they're identified. It just there's a lot of recipes in there. Everybody together creates these recipes. It's a wonderful thing. And now I'm hungry. Well, Dora, I hope to see you. Thank you for the work you're doing because I think it's really exciting. It's really exciting on so many levels. So check it out, people.
Hope you're hungry. For more easy and delicious recipes and even more foodie information, go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
When was the last time your nation was invaded by hostile forces who destroyed your forest, polluted your waters, and poisoned your land? You're probably thinking I'm talking about somewhere in the Middle East or overseas, somewhere far away from our first world climate woes here in the United States, right? Let me be clear, it shouldn't be happening anywhere on the planet, but I'm all too aware that it is, unfortunately. However, what is most shocking to most Americans is that this is happening right here in the U.S., and right over our northern border with our friendly Canadian cousins, and also down in South America. Yes, within our own borders, treaties are still being trampled, being ignored, and shoved aside in the name of fossil fuel, primarily. People are sick, people are dying, but women are standing up. Women, the keepers of family, community, and hope, are on the front lines fighting tirelessly for their families, for Mother Earth, for all of us. And they need support. I recently was honored to be helping at a WECAN, which stands for Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, a WECAN event at the UN called Indigenous Women of the Americas Protecting Mother Earth. I was the tech person, which was a bit daunting because Mercury was retrograde. Before the event got started, I did have a chance to sit and talk with the founder of WECAN, Osprey Oriel Lake, who organized the event.
Today we are hosting a wonderful event called Indigenous Women of the Americas, Protecting Mother Earth, Struggles and Climate Change Solutions. And I feel very, very honored that a lot of our Indigenous allies are here in town for the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. And so this is an incredible opportunity for us to hear their voices. They've been advocating inside the UN for Indigenous rights and many other things. And so today we're going to be able to hear from them and learn about what's happening in their communities, both from Canada, the United States, and into South America. The focus of the talk today, and I also wanted to mention we're co-hosting this event with Amazon Watch and the Indigenous Environmental Network. All of us together are putting on this event. And the women are really going to be telling us about particularly fossil fuel extraction in their territories, and the social injustices and the harms that are coming to their communities, both the biodiversity loss, the cultural loss, and the need really to change our colonial mindset and the paradigm that we're in right now, which is so very destructive for all of us, but particularly for frontline women. And we're seeing that frontline women around the world are being impacted first and worst by climate change. And WeCan did a full report on this, which anyone can download on our website, on exactly why women are central to the climate crisis, but they're key to solutions as well. And we particularly are supporting Indigenous women who have contributed the least to the climate crisis, but have so much to offer in terms of their traditional ecologic knowledge, their spiritual wisdom, their understanding of living in harmony with nature. And so we think this is an incredible opportunity for us to listen to Indigenous worldviews and to learn from them, as well as the very powerful struggles that they're facing. I was in Ecuador in March of this year, and was very fortunate to participate in the International Women's Day March that was held in Puyo, which is in Ecuador. And it was quite extraordinary. There was a historic march with seven different nationalities of women coming together for the first time, marching against fossil fuel extraction and the oil contracts that are there in the Ecuadorian Amazon. And it was just a very powerful day. Women had walked for 5 days, been in canoes for 3 days to make their way through the jungle for this important event. And we thought maybe there would be maybe 100 women, 200 women. It ended up being over 500 women marching through the streets, demanding justice, demanding that the oil extraction stop in their territory so they continue to live the way that they've been living for a very, very long time, and caring for the forests. I think it's also important to understand for us here in the United States that our weather patterns and our rain come from the Amazon rainforest. Scientists tell us there's what they call flying river that comes here to North America. So one of the things that we also want to express today is that we are all connected, and that it's our responsibility to care for people on the front lines of climate change who are protecting forests, protecting the waterways, protecting the mountains, that in fact, we can't live without water, air, food, and the frontline communities are standing there between all of these different corporations who are coming in and causing the extraction and protecting these regions for us, and we need to really stand with them.
I met most of the panelists at a similar event last fall, and I was really no less awestruck by their presentations this time. Casey Camp Horneck is a Ponkan Nation leader, did a powerful invocation and blessing that set the tone. And each presenter seemed to have an increased intensity and sense of urgency since I had last seen them. In fact, some of the women from Ecuador had suffered some painful losses as the direct result of their fight against Chinese oil companies invading their rainforest. By some miracle, I managed to get Candy Mossett set up on a large screen projector through Skype so she could do a presentation, and wow, did she. Candy is the Native Energy and Climate Campaign Organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network and is a very passionate voice against fracking and fossil fuel extraction. Her message, spoken through some tears of frustration, delivered some hard truths about what she and many others like her are living through. The room was filled beyond capacity and the air conditioning was busted. Oh, man. It just intensified the sense of critical need for help. Yet the room was stunned silent by each of these women's presentations. Crystal Lamaman, Beaver Lake Cree Nation Treaty Coordinator and Communications Manager in Alberta, Canada, stunned us with a slideshow that illustrated the horror of the tar sands and what it means to her community, and the fires that are happening. Oh my gosh. The South American women kept their interpreter frantically busy taking notes and trying to keep up with their stories, their pleas for support, and their absolute resolve not to give up. Wow.
You know, it's one thing to read about these issues or even listen to a podcast like this, but to hear these women speak from their hearts about what is happening to their families and their communities, it had an impact similar to a huge boot in the gut, really. It was like getting, you know, and rightfully so. As one woman said, we are fighting for Mother Earth. We are fighting for all of us. We need your help. We need your support. I heard that call, so I'm sharing that with you all because I'm hoping that, you know, we can all become more educated about what's really happening and get involved. So please visit wecaninternational.org to learn more about these amazing women and the work they are doing around the globe and how you can help.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THE greendivas.com.